Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am a little jet-lagged, very little jet-lagged, very recharged and refreshed and ready to tackle these next 30 games, and then the postseason starts, so it's going to be a busy time. Yeah,
David, for everyone who probably remembers, listens to the show, was in Vegas with his family for his 60th birthday. How was it?
Whoa, 59th.
I aged you by a year.
Don't you fucking dare.
I aged you up by a year.
Well, I was there for someone else's 60th. My accountant's wife turned 60, Kathy, and she was there with her husband and part of my brother's family. But yeah, they were turned 60. I turned
50. You know why? Because you keep talking about turning 60, so that's why it's stuck in my brain.
It's my next birthday, buddy.
It's 59th. David, age ain't nothing but a number. You probably feel like you're in your 40s. So
the greatest. I mean, I had it's ridiculous how much fun we have when we go on these trips. But the best news of all is I'm in the wind with I had dinner with my brother, one of my brothers, and our wives. And then my other brother was with his whole family because that was the one that was turning 60, his sister-in-law. And then we all met up to walk to the Sphere from the wind. You can actually walk directly from the wind to the Sphere. We didn't know that. We were walking outside to get there, and a dude, a staffer from the Wind, dressed very, very nicely, well-appointed guy, looked about my age. It turned out he was from Puerto Rico. I had no idea he was from Puerto Rico. So his accent was incredible. So we were walking and chatting. It's a long fucking walk to get there, but it's a nice walk. And I don't know how we got to talking about it, the age of my twins and his kids. One of his oldest kids is my kid's age. And I don't know what I said, but I mentioned that, you know, I was here. I turned 59 the other day, and he's like, he grabbed my arm, which, trust me, they're little BBs. They're not big, strong python arms or whatever. And he's like, there's no way you're 59. And my wife said, he's 59. He's like, dude, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And I said, that's what my doctors keep saying. So that was great to hear that, because he was a well-built dude. But
you are a young man, David. Yeah. You are a young man.
I feel good.
Feel good. Yeah. Doing a lot of good things. All right. So you saw U2 for the first time ever live. Was it everything you thought it would be?
So my wife had seen them before, and but none of us had been to the Sphere. The closest thing I compare it to is going to see Hamilton. Although Hamilton made me weep, I didn't come close to crying this time. It was a work of art of which I've never seen like it before. The combination of the visual artistry of the building, the architecture, the staffers, there were just people everywhere with signs. How can I help? Or how can I be of assistance? Like, so, and they've been doing this in September, but they realize most people haven't gone before. It could not have gone smoother. The place is fucking sick. It's just, I don't know how else to say it. And then Bono's voice was incredible. I did not expect that, because we have listened to some concerts more recently on YouTube, and they didn't always sound so great. Well, maybe it was just bad recording, because his voice was great. The musicianship was incredible. The best thing of all, Gerard, was I came away inspired as someone who coaches athletes. Their commitment to each other and to the art and to the music, I mean, this is what makes the greats, right? I'm sure Hendrix was the same, and Bob Dylan and Springsteen and the Jackson 5 back in the day and whatever. Every fucking show, I bet, was a home run grand slam for them. They just, every second mattered.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious to all of us. Like, I remember looking at my brother. First of all, the screen is so incredible that you sometimes think you're at an outdoor concert, because in front of you is like the desert because you're in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you are, and it's bright as if the sun is shining. You're in a fucking, and it was 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, or 10:30 even. And you think you're outside at a stadium concert. It's really quite incredible. But I was looking at my brother a few times, my brother Mike. My brother Rick sat behind us a few rows when this was happening. And we both just had a look on our face like, we're seeing something special here. Like, this is really incredible. And then the last thing of all is, as I say goodbye to Mike, he gave a toast a couple of years ago for me that he's like, pretty much all the greatest moments of my life, my brother is right there with me, meaning his older brother, me. And he said to me, once again, we experienced an epic situation together. And that's what it felt like, is that we'll never see anything like it again with you two anywhere. Because the next concert, if we ever see them again, we'll just be at a regular, I wouldn't even go, right? Probably. I've never gone before for a reason. I like them fine. They're a good band, but dude, this was like, I can't wait. I'm not going to see Fish. Not a fan of Fish.
Right.
I don't do that. But if it was someone good, I'm there. Man. Yeah. Vegas is great that way.
Well, I think, you know, more so than the location and all that, what you're tapping into is the things that ultimately matter. And is this is something that you probably, you know, you've, there's someone who's done enough podcasts with you now for as long as I have, and knowing you as well as I'm starting to know you, you know, you've probably learned early on in life that it's not about things and it's about the experiences and relationships with people that ultimately matter, right? These are the things that you're going to take away and file with you, you know, in life. And that's what it's all about, right? It was with your brothers and their wives and everybody and your wife. And it was just, yes, of course, you two, incredible band, one of the all-time greats, right? But it's the company you are with that, right, that amplified the experience.
No, I mean, of course, you're insightful and right. There is a truth about when you can afford to some things, it definitely makes it special. My wife and I have gone through plenty of times in our lives, especially, you know, early, where like 1 year for Valentine's Day, I gave her, I spent $1. That's all I had. I was 23 or 5 or whatever. I bought a packet of 50 stickers, hearts, and put them all around her bedroom and our 2-bedroom apartment. She still found those hearts years later. but that's all I had. And so we could afford to do more. And so some of those restaurants are expensive as hell. My brothers are so generous. They paid for a lot of it, especially in and around my birthday time. But what you said is right. Like my wife and I's favorite meal all week was going to get bagels every morning at this incredible deli that I didn't even know existed. It's been there since 89. I did the calculation. I spent, I think, 52 weeks of my life in Vegas in the last, you know, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of Bagel Mania. It's a joke. It's the best Jewish deli I've been at. We spent whatever, $15, $20 every time we went in the morning. The other meals were quite different. But those were great because I was with her. And then, seeing my brothers a lot was great. We partied till almost 2 in the morning one night at a cool spot called the Barbershop in the Cosmopolitan, where they have a live band that starts at 10:30. Went to a comedy club late. Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club was really funny. Yeah. But yeah, just it wouldn't be the same. When my wife and I go, it's not the same. We have a great time. But my brothers and I, you'll experience it. Next time we come to New York, you're going to come out with the Thor boys.
Nice.
There's something about the three of us together, dude. In fact, we talked about next year what we want to do. I think I want to invite all my, and I'm turning 60 then, not now. I want to bring all my NBA guys that aren't an All-Star weekend also, because they're family to me too. So we talked about, you know, what we do and whatever, but it's a year from now. And the one thing I'll finish with this, I've really noticed lately, I just want to take it one day at a time. Not that I think I'm dying soon. I'm not, at least not theoretically. I mean, no one's told me I am. I don't want to look forward. I got a lot to look forward to. I want to lock in on today. Let's make today great. It's been a big theme for me this last like 6 months. And my son's got senior night coming up. My daughter's got graduation. Mm-hmm. Well, that's in the future. We're just going to do something today. We got to plan it for the future. I get it. But don't attach emotion to it. I'm clinical about my plans going forward. I'm emotional about today. And so I've been watching film since 6:30 this morning. A lot of players coming back today, a lot of games from G League to NBA. And I'm excited about the opportunity to do it and be of clear mind and body to do it.
Well, I know one thing you were not doing while you were away was watching anything that had to do with All-Star Weekend.
I saw 2 dunks. not on purpose. I was at a bar with my wife getting a drink, and it was on the TV. I'm like, oh, I don't want to see it. My eyes are burning.
My eyes.
I saw one missed dunk. I don't remember who did it. Yeah, I just saw. But I did see it. I saw 2 highlights of the All-Star game at the airport on Monday, and I thought it was warm-ups. I thought that was because you couldn't hear the audio. I figured it was some kind of funny thing that happened at warm-ups because there was no one else on defense. There was no one on defense. It was just a guy shooting a layup or a dunk. Right. And then I realized, oh, no, that was the game because I saw the score in the bottom. I'm like, okay, good.
Well, there was a lot of hand-wringing, David, as there is every year around All-Star time with mostly like our colleagues in the media who are like, this is terrible. How do we make it better? But you have an idea for the All-Star game. What is your idea for All-Star game?
It's a combination of things. So first of all, these players, this is not news to you, they're exhausted. And it is a cruel irony that the guys who most deserve a break, the ones that are carrying their teams, are the ones that don't get much of a break. Okay. So first of all, they should have their last game pre-All-Star on a Sunday. Done. Everyone's done on Sunday. Go home. Everyone go home. All-Stars, young guys come back on maybe Thursday. All-Stars come back on Friday for a Sunday game, okay? You can even finish the games on Saturday. Let them see their families. The other thing is a lot of the All-Stars have families as opposed to mom and dad who can easily go see you. It's different when your kids can't come see you at night. They're going to sleep if they're 3, 4, 5 because they have school the next day.
Right.
So let them go home. Let them get to the sun, which for a lot of these guys is such a big deal because they don't see much during this time of year. Most of those winter states. And then the other thing is, and I'll get to the game itself in a minute, but if you're not an All-Star and you came back to practice on Tuesday, which everyone was back on Tuesday, to my knowledge, you had to run. They made you practice and you had to run sprints because you have a game on Thursday, today. So use the All-Star return as a way to get the All-Stars back in shape. They're not going to let themselves get too out of shape anyway, knowing they're going to have to play this game. So use Friday, Saturday as a way to get them back going again. Make sure their physios are there to check everything out to make sure they're fine. And then here's the kicker. As anyone that's run a gym like I have, we know how to make the games competitive. It's very simple. Do a best of 7. Man, no one wants to get run out of the gym. It's different when you play a 48-minute game. We'll come back later. It's not the same at a best of 7. You don't want to get swept. So when I used to run the gym at IMG, initially I was doing the teams. And I would, because I would have maybe 13 pros in the gym. So I'd split them up. We'd have a couple subs. And the idea was to go best of 7. I don't remember what we played to. Let's say we played to 11 back then. All-Star game could be 21, whatever. If it was 2-0, one team, I didn't even have to tell the other team, let's go. They didn't want to get swept. Yeah. And you didn't often get to 7 games, but you got some. And man, those games were, this was like they were really competing. The idea that the Rico runs, those aren't competitive. That's all bullshit. Anyone that's telling you, it may be more competitive than the All-Star game. I didn't see the All-Star game. But I promise you, those games are not competitive. They do have the tiered system, the 3 courts and their small courts. I know that's something you can do. I don't love that. I love the idea of just having 2 teams and it's a best of 7. And you can have different rules in each of these games. For sure you can have. And there's all sorts of things I can tell you later. But I think if you did it that way where there's shorter games, where there's a finite winner and loser, and then the next game starts 5 minutes later after a commercial break, whatever, I think you'd see guys lock in faster for sure, especially if you gave them rest to begin with.
And
they're getting some ramped up. I mean, as people texted me yesterday, how's practice going? Just getting ramped up for the game Thursday. That's exactly what the All-Star game would be. They'd be just fine. They'll be in shape. I also think, I've said this to you before, the 3-point shootout, I didn't watch any of it. I saw Steph's one. That looked pretty cool, but it's all just racked threes. Like there's so many competitive shooting games that will be so outstanding, including, do they do a two, I don't know the skills contest. Do they do a 2-man shooting drill?
They do a team skills competition where you have guys go together and they, you know, dribble through cones, pass, layup, but not shoot in the corner.
So 2-man shooting drill would be, we do this all the time. So you and I are a team. And let's say Henry and Travis are a team, okay? And we have one ball, and I'm a one basket with you. I shoot it from 3, if that's the rule. I have to get my own rebound. You have to reposition. And then when I get it, I throw it to you right away, and then you shoot. And you'll do a contest, first team to make 10 or 15 or 20, whatever. That might just be catch, shoot. The next one might be shot, fix, side dribble 3. You got to take one side dribble, and you got to move out of your space. There's all sorts of things you can do to make it team-wise. There's just lots of fun things we do already. A lot of these players have done those things. I don't know why they do the crappy. Some people like the 3-point contest, but trust me, there's way better contests to do than that for threes.
Well, one of the things I love that you said, and you know, I'm surprised, like this is a great idea to me, actually make it a true all-star break. sort of similar to the international break in European football, right? When the guys have to go back and play for their home countries. Well, in this case, you're not going back to play for a home country. You got a game to come back, but you fully get 5 days off. So to your point, you end Saturday or Sunday, and nobody's back in town until Thursday, Friday, right? That's a full rest, right? You can go to Bahamas or whatever closest warm weather places to you for a few days, get some sun, chill out, relax. I love that idea. Then we start coming back for All-Star, do all that stuff, and then we get the game going. Do that over the course of basically 2 weeks. I love that. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, if you think about it this way, if you finished your last game on a Saturday night, and that meant by Sunday, everyone's home, and no one's coming back to either Thursday or Friday, they've got 4 or 5 days, you play the game Sunday, the All-Star game, and then your next game could be Monday or Tuesday. You're not really taking that much more of a break. It's just a few days more. The journalists get a break too. The coaches get a break. I think it's better for everyone. I'm sure they won't do anything like it. But forget about the 48-minute. You still listen. Best of seven is going to take a while. You can't guarantee when it's going to end. You don't know.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of fun things you can do with that. You could do best of five also. But we play 7-game series in the playoffs. Why not do the same thing for the All-Star? Shorter games mean more game winners. Right? Mm-hmm. You can do Elam endings for each one. Whatever you want to do, it doesn't matter. Have shorter games. And I think these guys can't help be competitive. But it's hard to be competitive when you're already down 20 because you just were mailing in and the other team happened to make some more shots. Yep. And there's other rules, too, you can have. Like, for example, if I shoot, I'm not on your team, and my team goes and gets a layup, and one of your teammates hasn't crossed half court, it's a violation on you. My team gets the ball back. Mm-hmm. All right? If I score and one of my teammates hasn't crossed half court, or you could even say the top of the key area, then it's no basket. You've got to change ends. There's so many different rules you can make. You can give an extra point for a 4-point shot. You can do one for if the ball touches five teammates at one time. There's lots of rules you can do, and you can do it game to game. This rule counts this game, not this game. You could have a game with no screens, no ball screens allowed. Right, go screens only, no ball screens. There's things you can do that we all do these things anyway and pick up in the offseason to help our guys think the game more. And again, they'd be more competitive. I understand because I understand the game wasn't competitive at all.
It was not. But I mean,
again, I saw the score, so that's all I need to know.
The score tells you all you need to know. One of the things that comes out of every All-Star weekend is Adam Silver. This is one of the two times per year. I mean, it does talk to me more, but like this is one of the times where he's like out in front of like and a mass general group of reporters where he kind of gives the State of the Union and answers questions. And he talked about the G League Ignite. And I'm going to read some of them, paraphrase. And he's not sure what the future of Team Ignite will be because before there was a hole in the marketplace that we thought we were filling before doing that. And now my focus is turning to earlier development of those players. If you're seeing now what we're seeing in terms of teams being close to 30% of the league, players born outside of the United States. And it's clear that the development is very different in many of those programs outside of the U.S. More of a focus on practice, less of a focus on games, which seems to be the opposite of many of the youth programs in the United States. And now with NIL and the various things that exist within college, players can get paid now for being there, which is what the G League Ignite was sort of like bridging the gap. Well, come here, we'll develop you. You don't have to worry about going to class and do all that other stuff. And you're getting paid, yada, yada, the whole nine, right? Well, now they're saying since NIL exists, and really, players were not really getting developed through Team Ignite. And this is something you talked about, even in its inception. It may be gone by the wayside. And you have many thoughts about this because player development is literally what you do for a living.
Yeah. So Adam Silver said it's about the NIL money. They were filling a hole they no longer are doing. But I think he knows the G League Ignite experiment was a failure. It's okay. Like we all fail and then you're supposed to get better. The NBA just isn't in the business of development. It never has been for that matter. There are individuals who work inside the NBA that understand development, but as an entity, they don't understand it. As someone who does understand it, I can quite tell you for sure they don't. And so it'll mean all those players will have to go to college or go to Europe, which is fine, or Australia, play overseas is fine. It's an option. The Overtime Elite, I think, still in existence, so they can always do that too. The Thompson twins did not learn how to play offense, but they seem to be one. Azura's defense has been transcendent for a rookie. I'm sure Overtime Elite didn't ruin that. It helps to be super tall and athletic and very, very fast and have an edge about you, which is what the Thompsons play with. But yeah, it seems like I think the G League in general has been a gigantic failure for development. There's so much talent. There's lots of reasons why it's a problem. I don't blame the NBA for that. That's the individual franchises. The Ignite itself is just bad. It's just too many young guys, too many competing egos. They're all competing for the same draft spot. So that doesn't work out good. It's just a mess. And so, yeah, they're going to cut bait, in a sense, and just bail out of it. And it'll be fine. These guys will have to go to college. I don't think it's a bad thing in the world to be 18 and be on a college campus for a year, even if you know you're going to leave after a year. And you know what? Maybe you're not. Like, you got to play well. You got to do some stuff. Every year, there are players who enter college, assuming that it'll be a one and done, and they end up playing 4 or 5 years. Every year it happens with guys that thought they were done, aren't. And so it's not a bad thing. As everyone knows, you don't just go to college to get the degree. In fact, I'm not even sure it's the least, it might be the least valuable thing you get, the piece of paper that says you graduated. The people you meet, the connections you might make in the future, the connection you make to the alumni that have already gone through your school are potentially super
learning about
valuable.
Yourself and growing.
And then the other part, yeah, is you aren't professional yet. Like I tell my kids now, both of them are faced. Well, my son's, even if he leaves Florida State, he's going to go get a second master's somewhere else. My daughter's about to graduate college. I tell her all the time, camp's about over, but it's okay that you went to camp. Like these guys, it's okay they went go to camp. They're still, it's still hard. I talked to a player 2 weeks ago in the Big 12, a very, very, very good player in the Big 12 who I know very well. And it's a hard league, man. It's tough. Every road game is a beast. And his teammates are talented, but they want to do well too. And if you're shooting, maybe they're not shooting, they're upset. It's a lot to deal with. But still, it's camp compared to what the average a non-college student is doing at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21. So I don't think it's a bad thing for anyone. It's too bad it's didn't working out, but I think Adam Silver is smart to just end it.
Yeah, and it's something you've talked about before, David. The incentives don't line up, right? I mean, every young player in the G League thinks the way I get to the NBA and get paid is by buckets, right? And yeah, it's
correct.
Like, well, then what you have is everyone on the team wants to dominate the ball and score all the time, and they're not learning how to actually affect winning the game. Because if you hope to get picked by the Celtics, and you use an example before you left for vacation, you ain't going to be shooting the ball anyway. So what are you worried about that for, right? They got two dudes who are going to take the majority of the shots. You got to do all the other things. Learn what Derek White and Jrue Holiday know how to do. You want to get a long career and get paid? Figure out how to do those things. But for whatever reason, there's a disconnect there.
Well, and the other thing too is if you can't be as good as those guys, you learn how Kevon Looney plays or someone. I talked to a former world champion yesterday afternoon who's still in the NBA. Not 30 years old yet, so he's got some years to come. And his knowledge of the game is, I said to him, I said, people say I'm a genius. I don't know if I am or not. I'm not stupid. But that guy, I said, you are. You can't play 5, 6, 8, 9 years in the NBA and not be a basketball genius. If you are, something's really messed up with you. You've seen every possible scenario and every strategy and every counter to it. And this young man happens to be a definite basketball genius. He just learned so much. He went to college, I think, for 1 year. He learned it in the NBA. And it's incumbent upon all these guys to learn how to play. And that means that's not the same as learning how to score. And let me rephrase that. It's not the same as learning how to take shots, which a lot of guys do. Jalen Green still has a lot to learn. Jaden Ivey's making progress, still has a lot to learn, which is fine, right? One guy went to the G League, one guy went to college. Cam Thomas, mm-hmm. I think you would argue, has a lot to learn. He can really score. He mm-hmm. went to college. So mm-hmm. we're not all saying only going to college allows you to learn the game. No, especially if you're just there a year or two. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn. But I think, and you made this point a little bit ago, learning about yourself is good too. How you best deal with stress, how you best learn. The difference between what can be done in college at the right programs and what isn't done enough is people helping you figure that out, right? The average student doesn't get any of that. They're just on their own. Maybe they get an advisor telling them what classes to take. The better programs have coaches to help you understand. how you best learn, how you best deal with stress, how to better deal with stress. All these kinds of things matter and prepare you for the world's best league. And but as I've said many times before, I benefit from the ineptitude that's out there, because I end up, players end up matriculating to me and my business because they're desperate for help. They need help. They just do. And they all range from different things. Henry's got this great article we'll get to in a minute about Scoot. Mm-hmm. That I asked him to write. I don't typically give Henry any advice on what to write. I'm not capable of that. But he's been out for a while. He's busy doing, I don't know, they claim writing a book is hard. So it was much harder for him than me, because his was a much more complex book than mine. But I wanted to hear I didn't say Scoot, I said do something about Portland. But it's a great article, and it's really great article. But he's got the quote from our old editor, Royce Webb, players are like snowflakes. Royce said the same thing to me. Exactly. So every they're all different. They all learn differently. The NBA struggles to accommodate that. They think it's a catch-all, and right. There's no such thing. So
yeah,
because of that, people like me can have a nice business.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned Henry's article. Let's get right into it. You know, one of Henry's great skills, and he has a lot of amazing skills, is the ability to use a simple analogy to describe something more complex. And what you do, David, is player development. That is extremely complex. You do a very good job of talking about it to us on this podcast in simple ways, but it's not. It's right. Like when you're trying to figure out how to help all NBA guys, I know you're racking your brain at night being like, what the fuck's going on with this dude's shot? Like, it's painstaking work. But he uses a cooking analogy, basically, when he's talking about Scoot and how to make him better. Yeah. I love it, too, because the picture's a nicely plated lasagna from a restaurant, looking perfect with the right layers. And, like, I mean, it takes work to get a lasagna to look like that when you are done. A lot of trial and error. Bad tomatoes, good tomatoes. I don't know. Maybe that's not good. I mean, it's the same thing when you're trying to figure out, how am I going to be good at this insanely hard game? Whereas you often say, bad guys are trying to kill me and stop me from doing what I want to do. It's really hard. And Scoot, young guy who's super talented, you know, he's got a lot to learn, but we're starting to see some trends in a positive direction for him.
Yeah, we've talked about the show The Bear. Did you see The Bear? Second mm-hmm. season? So the second season, The Bear, she's reading, I forget, Phil Jackson's book, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
The woman who won the Emmy for supporting actress. Great, great actor. There's so much about teamwork in that series, this second season, a little bit of the first two, that it clearly the writer is someone's an NBA fan, I would think. Mm-hmm. If the right cooking includes all those kinds of things. And in Scoot's case, Henry pointed out to me how what kind of joyful guy he was. I did not see that when I watched him in the G League. I saw it in Summer League. I saw it. I remember exactly. I was sitting with an NBA player right with me, right off the court from Scoot's game. Might have been his first game in Summer League. And, I loved him. He wasn't very good as a player in that game, but just seemed, I did not expect that. I just didn't. The G League guys don't play that way. That's not that bond. Again, because they're rivalrous. They're trying to take each other's money. If you get drafted second, I'm not getting drafted second. And there's more money there, although Brandon Miller was second. But you know what I mean. He went to college. I think that there's a lot there. There's a lot to cook with, right? There's a lot to cook with. Super fast, super quick, super powerful. Mm-hmm. Handles it great. Don't know yet about his passing. Willing passer. Not sure how gifted he is. I need to see more. Not really know if he'll figure out shooting, but his free throw is pretty good. He's on a hell of a stretch right now of shooting, sure is. Which Henry wrote about. And he's going to get the green light. He's going to get all the royal jelly and oxygen he needs, playing time. So if he can get going, that's a big, big step forward for Portland when your quarterback is a guy with that kind of talent. So it might take some years, though. It ain't easy. Hard game.
No. And why is it, David, so important for, as a rookie on a team that is bad, for him to be showing this level of joy and excitement? Henry put the clip in when it was announced that Duop Reed, his teammate, got a standard contract. He was super excited. Why is all of that so important when you're young and playing on a bad team?
First of all, I think it shows some maturity. It's easy to be self-centered, which young people tend to be. And he clearly isn't. He recognizes, I think, that if we're going to be successful, it's going to be we that are successful, not me only. And I think it's a better, I mean, again, it's jazz. This isn't a solo act. You know, this is, we all have to kind of, I told you, this U2 thing really hit me. The commitment, the four musicians, three of them were originals. One was replacing the drummers, mm-hmm. not well. So he hasn't performed yet in Vegas. The commitment they had to each other, there's a couple of songs where the bass player, who's an original, was like facing the drummer. They clearly were synchronizing something mm-hmm. together mm-hmm. because his back was to the audience. Mm-hmm. I thought that was super cool. Like, you have to be thoughtful that way sometimes in their craft as well as ours. And also, when you're the quarterback, I go back to a quote I remember hearing. I told this before. Sean Marion was talking about the Suns. Mm-hmm. And they were playing, I want to say, the Mavs, and Rick Carlisle was solving the Nash ball screen actions with just two players. So basically, he was saying, we're not letting him dish to anyone else. We're going to guard these two guys with the two guys we have on them and make him score. No one's going to come and help, whatever. And so Nash was scoring a bunch. They really turned him into a scorer. When instead of assist first guy, he was score first guy. He was good enough to do that. But Marion was asked about selfishness there. Mm-hmm. And he said, if it's Steve Nash taking those shots, selfishness isn't part of the equation. It's not in his blood. You know, that's earned. Well, Scoot's earning that. So when he takes a big shot, maybe he's not even all that open. This one player anyway won't be thinking, ah, what a selfish guy, which they think all the time mm-hmm. because of how he reacted when he got his contract. So you're laying tracks, right? You're laying the groundwork of a real potential leadership opportunity for him that bodes well for the franchise if he can continue to figure it out. No guarantee.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the league is hard, as we said. But yeah, he's... Things are looking bright there for him, and if Portland can continue to draft and develop well, they could have the makings of something nice. Look, Oklahoma City, maybe fans thought, oh man, we lost Kevin, James, and Russ. When are we ever going to come out of the darkness? They got all those picks. They're out the darkness now, right? Might be a one seed in the Western Conference playoffs this year and have a bright future ahead of them. So, you know, if you're smart, diligent, you get the right kind of people in your organization, good things can happen. All right, folks, we'll be back after a quick commercial break. All right, David, one of my pet peeves is, and it's not a real pet peeve, but it's just something that's like not accurate. All-Star game comes back and everyone says, all right, time for the second half of the season. I'm like, guys, it's not second half. Like, you got 27 games left. We're already in the second half of the season. This is now, in a way, a modified sprint to the end, right? We got to get ourselves, make sure we're healthy, ready to go, because once the playoffs start, we are who we are, right? And we gotta make sure we're aimed. Those of us who are going to the playoffs, those who aren't, well, you got your own things to figure out. But it's, you know, it's go time now. So I thought, all right, what should we talk about? And I wanted to see, what would David Thorpe be looking at the last 27 games or so of the season? And I pretty much limited it to the top teams in the league instead of looking in, just because we don't watch bad teams. That's rule number one on the show. So we looked at all the good teams. All right, let's start with the Celtics, who have been the best team from start to this point. I just feel like they're in cruise control, but not cruise control when you're going 60. Like cruise control when you're going like 70. And they're like, look, we're good. We're staying healthy and we're going to be ready to. We know this is our time. We have enough experience. We have all the right elements to win a championship, and we believe we can do it.
Yeah, so a couple of things. There's only one full month left of the season, right? We have November, December, January, February, March as full months of games. Mm-hmm. A little bit in October, a little bit in April. Well, we're down to one full month because we have, mm-hmm. you know, less than, 10 days, whatever, of less than 10 in February. Mm-hmm. And then we got about 15 in April. So yep. You can do the math. 27 to 30 games for every team. Boston... I don't love the term playing with their food. I think it's I've used the phrase before, but it's can they flip a switch and like go on a 20-0 run, both in a game and in over the course of a series of 3 weeks or so? Can they win 12 of 13 and 14 of 16? If they start doing that, it's a hell of a sign that they're in kill mode. I look at their, I look at Porzingis' health. I don't really, when you wrote that, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think of it that way. I don't look for anything. I'm watching the games and fearing from there. But there'll be signs. And so if Porzingis can be healthy more, that's encouraging. If their bench can continue to figure stuff out, encouraging. And if their starters can continue to murder people, even take it up a notch, add those all things together, they go on long win streaks, you know, some 25-point beatdowns of good teams.
Yeah.
That's the assertiveness we're looking for on what we think will be the favorites going into the postseason.
Yeah. Boston, of course, number one team in the league, number one adjusted net rating, number one in offense, number three in defense. Just, you know, looking, and their adjusted net rating lead, David, is a full 3 points ahead of the second place team. Wow. We'll discuss next the Minnesota Timberwolves. Second in adjusted net rating, as I said, 10th in offense, or no, I'm sorry, wrong, can't see, 16th in offense, still bad, but number one in defense. For me, look, Ant's great. I still like Cat, though he has problems. I worry about that offense still. I don't know. I mean, we talked about it before. They don't value the basketball. They turn it over a ton. I mean, they're kind of young still, so that kind of makes some sense a little.
Yeah, not that young. How does Monte Morris do? Jay McDaniels is not shooting well. That's an issue. Yeah. Who's going to, you know, he's got to be guarded if he's going to be effective. Their bench is a concern. That's where Morris is so important. Conley just got a 2-year extension, I think. That's big. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so. Edwards is, to me, still a bit of an enigma. Is he, can he do what I just described with Boston? Can he put together like player of the month in February, or I'm sorry, mm-hmm. March, be in the running for it, be nominated for players of the week, whatever. And not just be casual. Cause he is young. Some guys that aren't Rudy and Kat and Mike, but they've got some young guys too. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at. And how do they handle the stress of fighting for a one seed, which they'll do?
Yep.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I think, is someone important for them, too.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
He had a stretch where, you know, he was defending well, hitting threes. I'm like, if this guy's doing that is so key for them.
Yeah.
A long, rangy kind of player. All right, next team, the Oklahoma City Thunder, who we just talked about coming out of the darkness. They are third in adjusted net rating, fourth in offense, fifth in defense. Love that top five profile in both. Look, we know what Shea is. He's outstanding. He is the only player on this team, David, that has significant postseason. And it ain't even that significant, but he has postseason experience.
Right.
Everybody else, not a lot there, but this team could still be a one seed.
I mean, they can't do the playoff experience until they get to the playoffs. So we only have the regular season now. Giddy, to me, is an issue with his shooting. Mm-hmm. Is he not going to be guarded? So if he's not going to be guarded and you can't play him on offense, and he's not doing so well in defense, that's a problem. Dort's been shooting great. Does he get, you know, much better than he has in previous years? How old do you think Lu Dort is?
25?
That's not a bad guess. 24. Yeah, it's a good guess. He's been around a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. He's been in the playoffs.
Yes, he's got playoffs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they lost that series to seven games.
Yep.
Maybe to Houston, I don't remember.
Yeah, yep. Exactly
remember,
right. Yeah, that's Chris Paul was on that team. Yep.
Mm-hmm. In the bubble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I'd like to see Giddy shoot better. To me, it's almost doesn't matter. This is a team. I also want to see Shea.
Yeah.
I'd like them to see win the MVP. Let's cement that. Be amazing. First Canadian to ever win the MVP, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had one, but I'd love to see that. So. Our neighbors are a great country. I coach a lot of Canadians. I'd love
six
to see
straight
that.
International player to win MVP. If he does win it, it'd be the sixth straight.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into Silver's comment about development with young players. I'm going to write a manifesto, a player development manifesto, I think.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that.
Yeah. And then, so maybe one day we'll have an American win. Not that I care, because I don't at all. We'll see. OKC, you'd like to see them. Moving forward in a really good way, coming into the postseason. And I think they've got some problems to solve with specifically the guy that plays with Josh Giddey or whoever replaces him.
Yeah.
He's got to be better. He's got to be better.
Yeah. Well, you brought it up when we talked about Adam's comments. You often mention the NBA. Colleges that have a monopoly on development. The NBA certainly doesn't. But I would imagine you would guess Europe doesn't either.
Definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. It's not a geographical situation. It's a human situation. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. There are coaches in the NBA know what they're doing. There are some coaches in Europe that know what they're doing. I'm sure Asia too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where we live. And you just have to follow the people that know what they're doing to fix it. And then if you do, like the Serbs in general teach the game very well. There's a fundamental thing. There's a toughness thing. That may be geographical, just the way you live. Mm-hmm. It's not true that you have to grow up poor to be great, right, or tough. Correct. That's for sure. One of the best things about coaching inner city kids who are this in the 80s, were from rough projects, was seeing them wake up to the reality that some of these really super rich private schools, of which white and black kids played for them, oh, they were just as tough as us. And the great thing was with my best players who traveled the country in the off season for AAU back then, even, or going to camps, they teach our young guys who've never left St. Pete. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally never get out of St. Pete. Like, guys, it doesn't matter what your color of skin is, where you're from, how rich mom and daddy are. Some guys just fucking want to kill you. Some guys don't. Doesn't matter. Rich kids, poor kids. Christian Lehner wanted to kill you always. Mm-hmm. Grew up blue collar, mm-hmm, poor. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good lesson for that. And you got to just find hungry kids, and you got to. And so I'll write this manifesto and then we'll talk about it. But I'll start with this. We got to do a better job casting a really wide net to young players before they're good and not the cream off the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get them to fall in love with working at this beautiful game. Yeah. That's like the page one of the manifesto. All right.
Well, we've talked about, you got to love the work. Like if you don't love the work, it ain't happening.
Love the game. You got to love the game. You got to find joy in it. You're not going to be a great clarinet player or guitar or anything else if you don't love it. It's hard to play the guitar. Yeah. I tried when I was 13. It wasn't fun. I sucked at it. It wasn't fun. My fingers hurt all the time. I fucked up with my pitching and my basketball, my football. I didn't like that.
All right. Next to you, the Cavaliers, to number two team in the East, hottest team in the league, fourth in net rating, 17th on offense, second on defense. So, of course, an easy thing to look at is their concern offensively, but they've gotten their guys back. Garland, Mobley, Jaren Allen was playing well prior to that. I always loved that look for them. If they figured out how to, you know, zig while everybody else is zagging, or zag while everybody else is zigging.
Go big, yeah.
Right? You got two bigs. That's a problem for you. You're going to grab all the rebounds, get second shot opportunities. I love that about them. And I would love to see them sort of like, for lack of a better term, mature. I'm looking for maturity from them. So that whole point you made about, can you win 12 of 14? They've kind of been already doing that. Okay, now, can you continue that? Because I think for them, if they lose in the first round again, it'll be a massive disappointment for them this season.
Right. So contrast that to Boston. Boston, we know, can, mm-hmm, because they're the best net rating, they're the best team. Cleveland has proven that they're doing it. So now what? Are you able to handle success? The break is over. How are you guys going to look tonight or tomorrow, whenever they play? Are you locked in? Do you have that same motor? Are you hungry? I had a player in college who was named player of the week for his conference. And I said, which was great. And I told him the next day, congratulations. Nobody gives a fuck.
I was waiting for you. I was waiting for it.
You're starting all over again. Are you humble? Are you hungry? Like that's over. That's an award based on history.
Yes.
Nothing to do with what's happening going forward. He appreciated it. Cleveland, then he went out and did not play very well in the next game, but he got in foul trouble too, and he was playing on a tough road game. Cleveland has rolled, and Donovan, that's the nice thing. Donovan's done this. He's been on a one seed before, right? Mm-hmm. He's been on a team that dominated the league. I remember Henry once telling me the Jazz a couple years ago, it was just a couple years ago, but like the Warriors in terms of their, what they were doing with domination in some of the better Warriors years. And they didn't handle it very well. So I think Donovan's got some good messages. And we'll see how Bickerstaff handles that. I think they're, you know, they're not going to continue to win 15 of 16, but 13 of 14, 13 of 17, mm-hmm, 12 of 16, you know, just be that team and lock up that second seed. That'll be a big deal.
Huge. Clippers. They are third in the West, fifth in adjusted net rating, basically tied with Cleveland in terms of adjusted net rating. Second on offense, 13th on defense. They're healthy. Zubac is back. Kawhi, PG. I think for me, what I'm looking at is defensively. Because I think, look, when you have those older players as your sort of like your anchor, we know they can't ratchet it up for 82 games and then in the playoffs. That's just physically not possible. But towards the end, are they going to start turning it up a little bit, amping up that D, like you said about mentioned about Boston flipping the switch? What am I going to look? If they're playing very good defense and they're healthy, I all of a sudden really like this Clippers team.
I like them now. Yeah, you want to see them get better defensively. They're really playing beautiful basketball. I'm writing about them. Mm-hmm. I may publish it today or tomorrow. Maybe we'll wait till Monday because Henry just got that piece out. But I've enjoyed studying them all weekend. That's what I did all weekend is study Clippers tape. We have a lot of clips to show. It's not just Harden pick and roll. It's Westbrook diving. It's Mann's got to shoot better. That's the big thing for me is they're not going to guard Terrence Mann. And so he's got to make some threes to make him guard him. He had a really good start to the year from three. He's not been good lately. We'll see how that goes. You know, now that Harden's there, he's not been shooting well. He needs to. But they are a team that can beat Denver like a drum. Mm-hmm. They can. They can beat Denver like a drum. There's no guarantee they will.
Right.
And not at all. And defense will really matter because they're going to score on Denver.
For sure. Well, I mean, folks, if you're listening, I mean, David literally, this is why I had him do this. I know he would. He literally found essentially the weakness on every team we mentioned so far that he's worried about, right? Mm-hmm. Terrence Mann shooting. What's Josh Giddey doing? Because he's not playing great on offense and he can't guard, right? Everyone's got this sort of like hole that he's like, this is where it's going to get exploited likely in the playoffs. All right. Defending champion Nuggets. This starting five is still, to me, I just great. Love it. Best in the league. In I don't know if the metrics say that, but I love it. Eighth in net rating, 11th on offense, 11th on defense. To me, David, they are the car on cruise control at 60 miles an hour on the highway. Not quite 70. They're just like, all right, we're just biding our time, making sure we're healthy, and then we'll see come postseason.
You know, they could fall into the mistake of thinking we can just recreate what we did last year. But the Clippers are better than the Lakers were last year. And maybe they'll play the Clippers before the conference finals.
Ooh.
So Denver's got to, I think, pick up their defense and pick up their bench. I think those two areas are areas of concern. Their starting five is what it is. You can get complacent with that. They know they've done it before. They know they have top two player in the world. And I rank them number one with Embiid being out now. Mm-hmm. Shea is going to be the MVP, I think. But
I think so. Jokic is the betting favorite right now, according to Vegas.
Is he really? Ooh, mm-hmm. I'd pick.
Wow, I would take Shea too, also.
I don't bet on basketball, but I don't bet on anything. But yeah, if I did, I'd be betting on Shea. I think he'll win it. I bet Jokic is going to lead. Like, I think he's going to, I know enough about him. He's going to recognize the opportunity here. And also the opportunity to fail. Like, guys, we need to get our bench going. We need to get them to be productive and confident and get them enough reps so that they can do it in the postseason. And it starts in the regular season.
No, absolutely. And the team that I threw out at the end, not because I actually think they're a title contender, but I like the spirit around this team and how they're playing basketball, or the Knicks. They are, let's see, fourth in the East right now, seventh in net rating, 10th on offense, 10th on defense. Look, Jalen Brunson, all-star, well-deserved. What's worrying me, of course, is the injury. How soon do they get OG and Julius Randle back?
Right.
That's huge. Those guys aren't back. This is just not even a conversation.
No, it's not. Randall, I read yesterday, is maybe having surgery. I'm not sure what that means. Well. Yeah, that was out yesterday. I was watching some college games last night. And my boy Ryan Pinone at Alabama. The hottest name in college sports right now. Offensive coordinator. Offensive coordinator for the number one offense in the country. And that's after losing the very talented Brandon Miller. And Noah Clowney went number one to the Nets. And then they're starting centers at the Spurs now from last year. So he's amazing. He's the best under 40 coach in the world. Anyway, watching that game against my friends that coached at Florida, I saw the bottom of the screen that Julius is considering surgery. That's an issue. But him and Mitchell Robinson,
right, yeah.
OG, as you said. But I'm also watching Miami. DeLon Wright looks like, I think he's going to Miami. Mm-hmm. I think that matters. A lot of people I've heard don't. I've not read it. I've just not caught up on my reading with them. But I like DeLon a lot. I thought I thought they would trade all those guys. Well, they didn't. But DeLon is moving to Miami. I think I saw him this summer. He looked good to me this summer. He looked athletic. He's a great defender. I think he's led the league in steals before. Yeah, I think he can make a difference. I really do.
I have a question for you. Speaking of Miami, do you think maybe even the Heat themselves, that teams have like convinced themselves that, oh, well, look, Miami did it last year. They were a play-in team and just ran through and got to the NBA Finals. We can do it too. You think there's a possibility that teams kind of just saw that and they're like, not taking the top teams in the East for granted, but like, look, after the Celtics are like, we're not afraid of the Bucks. We're not afraid of Cleveland. We're not afraid of any of the other guys. Philly's got Joel Embiid out. We can just kind of, once we get in, who knows? We can make something happen.
I know Spoelstra does an expert job of getting to worry about us because of what's happened before. Guys, twice, we figured things out late and got ourselves to the finals. And so that's our job. We can't worry about anyone else. And it's a good message for every other team. Let's keep getting better. Let's continue to tweak and adjust and find rotations that work and styles and strategies that work. And then we know from past experience that we can beat anyone. We knocked off Boston. Hell, we were up 3-0. And then beat them in game 7 on the road like a drum. They have buy-in. Guys know that it's true. Let's just get better. And I think it's a good message for everyone. But yeah, I'm not counting them out. I don't think it's likely, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, for sure. All right, even though no one's played a game yet, we'll do our top 5 heading into the end of the season here. Number 5, David, who's on your 5 line?
Number 5 for me is the youngest team in the league, OKC.
Same.
Nice.
Number 4.
Number 4, and really 2, 3, and 4 are almost like a coin flip now. Number 4, I've got the world champs.
Nuggets. I got Clippers. World champs, by the way, out of my top 5. Just so everybody knows. They're on the 6th line right now.
So you have the Clippers number 4?
For Clippers 4, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll tell you about the Clippers when we get to them. I've got the Cavs. I've got the Cavs, the second best team in the East, and they deserve to be number 3.
I got Wolves at 3.
See, I'm not buying Minnesota yet. I know.
Yeah, of course. Listen, they don't value the basketball. What's there to buy? They turn it over like it's their job.
I love that they play defense.
Yes, they guard. That's the reason why they're here. It's because they guard.
I love that. I've got the Clippers number 2 because they're the best in the West, in my opinion. Right there with Denver, but I give after watching all this LA tape, I really like what I saw from them. So I got them at number 2.
I got Cavs at 2, and we both have Celtics at 1. Look, I would just love for this, waving my magic wand, I would like healthy Clippers, healthy Nuggets, healthy Suns, healthy, I don't care who your 4th team is in the West. Whatever. Don't matter. Just healthy. OKC or Minnesota. One of the 2 young teams. Would just love to see those 4 duke it out.
If you can get access to a magic wand and you waste it on basketball stuff.
Well, in this context, if it's about basketball.
I know, I was kidding. If it's an unlimited magic wand.
It ain't got nothing to do with basketball. Please.
I know you'll solve some other issues first.
Oh, we're going to solve world issues for sure. Yeah.
Right. I know you well, my friend. Basketball, we'll get to the basketball.
Yeah, well, eventually.
All right, so before we leave, I want your opinion on the Steph for Sabrina. I didn't watch any of it.
Okay.
Not a single play. But what's your thoughts?
Henry and I talked about this on Monday, and I think the ratings did show that. That was probably the highest rated portion weekend.
Everyone said that.
And what a shock, because it was the most authentic and something we've never done before. Shock of all shocks. Right. Doing shit we've never done before. Yeah. Why are we still doing this old stuff? I think it's great. First of all, she's an outstanding shooter, obviously. By the way, her score would have won the actual, you know, with the guys in the competition. Yes.
Nice.
So, she's great. I love this idea. Let's just do more of that stuff. Make it funky. Make it fun. Listen, this league, we know what the problems are, David. This league is a problem. Young kids aren't watching it and aren't in love with it. Well, you know what's not going to make them not be in love with it? Doing stupid shit they don't care about. Do fun stuff like this.
And just imagine those two together at a 2-man shooting competition.
Love it.
With you have one team on each side of the court. Mm-hmm. And the first one to make 33s or whatever, there's so many different games you could
so
do.
So many fun things.
And I love getting the women involved. I'm all for of that. She shot the NBA 3, right?
Of course, yes. And she was money.
Look, how tall is she?
You know what you do? She's probably 5'9". 7, maybe 5'8".
Really?
Probably, yeah, I would guess.
Super impressive, wow.
Yeah, she's really good. Let me look her up. You know what else is awesome, too, is, I mean, we don't care because we don't do this, but when you do those two-man games like you're talking about, you can bet, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can have all the fun betting elements with this now. Yeah. So all the people who wanted to do that, they're going to, oh, my God. Yeah, it's all the props you can do with that.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to bet who wins. It can be which of the two guys makes the most threes, which of the two girls, or which the one makes the most, period, right? And who makes the least of them. Yeah, because you can track individual scores, yeah.
So much fun. Sabrina, 5'11", by the way.
Still, that's a long way, I mean, for a guy or a girl, a woman at that distance, at below 6 feet.
We are lucky that we get to be on NBA courts, and it still amazes me to this day when I step on an NBA court for a game and I stand at the three-point line, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It is far away from the rim. Really far.
I remember when my son got strong enough to be able to hit it pretty easily from distance, but it took a lot of work because it's a long shot. Yeah.
Long. Very, very long. All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend, and we will see you on Monday. Take care.